Hello, Gallatin Valley and online listeners. You are listening to KGBM, Bozeman Community Radio, broadcasting at 95.9 FM and streaming at kgbm.org. I'm Roxana, and this is Desert Oracle Radio Replay. You are listening to a voice from the past. Mine, in fact, because I'm recording this on July 24th, a few days before the show broadcasts. It's still smoky and hot, and maybe that's why the birds aren't singing so much at sunrise and sunset. Maybe you can hear my neighbor's dog issuing his complaints. Well, still, I'm enjoying those quiet times of day. How about you? Well, this week, our Desert Oracle Radio episode is titled Capricorn Full Moon, When Presidents Quit. It was July 21st, 2024, when this was created by Ken Lane, and he describes it like this. Did you know the current president's quiet quitting via Twitter on this Sunday in July was foretold by an astrologer on Twitter 2 weeks prior? That's no lie. And then he has the link where you can check it for yourself. He continues, the same seer predicted back in August 2020 that the current vice president would be the party's nominee in 2024 because it coincides with the VP's second Saturn return, which is also hitting your Desert Oracle radio host right about now. This is an emergency broadcast about prophecy and portents with astrologically appropriate soundscapes by Red, Blue, Black, Silver. Well, that's what he has to say about it, so I'm going to let you hear it for yourself. Enjoy!
Desert Oracle Radio, the voice of the desert.
Night has fallen on the desert. You ever finish writing up your radio show and immediately realize it's not going to last through the weekend? And you ever do that twice in a row? Once on the Friday and then once on Saturday? What happened to the Lord's Day? When is that anyway? I guess that was yesterday. Lord Saturn. Maybe that's not something you've been through recently. I hope not. Maybe you don't have a radio show and are free to enjoy your weekends, getting ready for the weekend. Maybe you're in an ice cave somewhere. That sounds very pleasant. Unless it's Plato's cave and you are chained within it, able only to see the shadows on the cave wall. The shadows from whatever's happening outside. It's an allegorical tale. I always sort of thought he could have just skipped it, especially when it comes to returning to the cave to try to save the other prisoners, and they don't want to leave. They're scared of what's out there. I wind up thinking about that instead of thinking about the allegorical tale. Why are they chained up in a cave looking only at the wall? What were their crimes? Were they bad people? Were they good people? Political prisoners? Why would you risk returning to the cave when the punishment would surely be severe? Likely a permanent return to the cave if you got caught, if not execution. And you gotta get through all of that to get to the part about the forms. Well, that part makes sense without a lot of stage setting. This is in Plato's book, The Republic. For a lot of people who read the ancient philosophers, the Republic is sort of tough going, although it contains some of his greatest insights, along with certain rules that allow you to control your environment, to line up the soldiers, set up your rule. Beauty is a crucial form. We know what it is. We recognize it instantly. There is no intellectual or rational action in the recognition of beauty. That's beautiful. That's all you need. Your thoughts on beauty, your standards of beauty, etc., are all just rationalizations of the instinctual, of the inherent acknowledgement of the true form. Same goes for justice, of course. For some, justice is society-wide, and for others, it's very personal, and for the many, it's somewhere in between. Sometimes of our own doing, chasing a burglar down the moonlit dirt road on a tractor, for instance. But more often, it's the state's doing, law books, cave prisons, etc. Eidos. That's how we say the Greek word in America, pretty close to the Greek, apparently. Eidos means the forms. Forms. If I ever had 6 months free from work before I die, it sure would be nice to get a tutor in ancient Greek and be able to read these books out loud as they were meant to be read. Maybe after the final technological crash and the Butlerian jihad of late 2024. Take some time off. Move to Leonard Cohen's old house on Hydra. If you appreciate Carl Jung, his archetypes are pretty much Plato's forms. If you make use of the tarot cards, the major arcana illustrates central notions of human life. And these illustrations represent instinctual recognition of certain situations and certain players in our world, certain kinds of figures and ideas that govern our human lives, love and war, failure and death, etc. As the fledgling knows to fly when it falls from the nest, our souls know these forms of existence from the act of falling into our physical bodies, so writes Plato. Speaking for Socrates. Anyway, I'm glad I can go back to making abrupt transitions with the word anyway again, now that it's no longer ageist or fascist to do so or whatever, we are unburdened. But of course we are not. We are the sum of what comes before, and our mission is to transcend it if we choose to accept the mission. It's also fine to not choose any mission and just go about your life. That's what most people have always done. And there is no sin in doing exactly that. But most of you listening to this radio show are the ones who saw those certain flashes that Plato describes. You saw the forms.
Desert Oracle Radio.
In this this eternal realm of the forms, how much the disembodied soul perceives during its journey to becoming human is the determining factor of your fate. Those who had the clearest glimpse of the forms will, in Plato's telling, or in Socrates telling Plato, are destined to become the philosopher, the artist, the musician, the lover. As Socrates is quoted as saying, "We are the music makers and we are the dreamers of dreams, wandering by lone sea breakers and sitting by desolate streams. World losers and world forsakers on whom the pale moon gleams. Yet we are the movers and shakers of the world forever, it seems." Actually, that's the opening stanza of Arthur O'Shaughnessy's 1873 poem, simply titled Ode, from his book Music and Moonlight. After the philosophers and the artists and the musicians, all in pursuit of this highest form of love, comes the righteous rulers, the righteous kings and warlords, followed then by the more common politician or economist or business person. Keep going and you finally get to the poets, miserable creatures that they are, mere imitators of the true artist. And those souls that glimpse the very least of the true forms are basically the people who argue with strangers on Twitter, and also tyrants. This all according to the expert, Plato, quoting Socrates, the real expert. We live in an America where political party, the absolute lowest of human affiliations, is elevated to the highest importance with both the elite and the commoner. And that's just a garbage way to go about your life. Free yourself, if you can, from political party fundamentalism. It doesn't care about you. It only uses you up and spits out the bones. The political party is simply a war grouping, a power structure, and it has no true form beyond that. It has no ideals, regardless of name, regardless of platform, beyond maintaining and growing power. It also has no mandate from heaven to exist, being a temporary grouping of low-minded, power-hungry people. Never anything but, never anything beyond. Being such a low temporary alignment of convenience, it easily discards whatever marketing terms it may be known for. And if the political party entity feels anything, which it doesn't, it is disdain for those who believe in it. The political party will loudly and sternly broadcast its version of reality to the masses and then abandon that reality without ceremony, without honor, because the entity itself was born without honor, immune to honor. It doesn't matter which party. This year alone in America, you have seen political parties such as the Democrats, the Republicans, the Democratic Socialists of America, the Libertarians of various small L and capital L iterations, all confidently throw out the most obvious lies, the most shameless reversals again and again. Sometimes the party loses, as happened with the Republicans, and the once powerful party bosses scramble for shelter. But sometimes several parties collapse simultaneously as the actual vampires behind the curtain jostle for position in the coming new order. They care not what that order is, don't be fooled. A political party cannot have morals because it's not human, it's a political party, which is nothing but a temporary, convenient grouping of humans who want more power and use the masses of humans to achieve that power. It's fine to follow political parties, just never forget, you're the one with morals. What they cannot control, of course, are the winds of fate. They can plot, they can plan, but they too are at the mercy of the whims of the Great One, who is expressed in myriad ways through many gods and spirits and actions and intense waves of feelings that we call vibe shifts. All those in places of power desire to control these vibe shifts, desire to feel that unmistakable selection by the gods. And sometimes those who don't seek that power, at least in the ancient accounts, are granted it nonetheless. Here I speak of Moses, of the Spider-Man, and others of this sort, but regardless of their intent, their aspirations, meaning their breathing of desire, only the gods make the choice to make those aspirations come true. And that choice is temporary, for as long as it pleases the gods, or till another god vacates their choice through stronger will and stronger action. The words you hear from the news and the political tools, they don't much matter. They mean nothing, really. They are crude tools like bombs and bullets and hammers. So say the great books, anyway. Seems like how it works to me. Now listen, on January 10th of 2021, 3.5 years ago, I posted something on Twitter, now apparently the official channel of national information and government, the place where even presidents step down. Quiet quitting, just post your resignation letter and turn off the lights. Well, I posted on Twitter on that occasion about a messily written book of science fiction published the year before my birth, the 1964 straight-to-pulp paperback novel, The Simulacra. It's a book I first read in 2006, and though a minor work in the canon of Philip K. Dick, I maintain that it was the work of a divinely inspired philosopher and prophet. Here's what I said 2 weeks before Joseph Biden was sworn in as 46th President of the Republic of the United States of America. I keep the Philip K. Dick book, The Simulacra, around as a sort of instruction manual for the times at hand. It's a minor work, one of four novels he published that year, but since 2016, it has felt like the most accurate of his hazy visions. Hang on, I have to say this part. The Soundscapes by Red, Blue, Black, Silver. The The simulacra takes place in the mid-21st century, a time when the whole government is a fraud and the president himself, Derrida, the old man, is a broken-down AI android. The coup against this presidency is the work of the government itself, of course. It's not exact. Prophecy is always mixed up, so in this book you've got a series of increasingly powerful first ladies, including the current first lady, who is the face of the incapacitated president, and there's a neo-fascist populist named Berthold Goltz, a mix of Bernie Sanders and Donald Trump, and there's the DC coup using mass media mind control, run by the tech giants who literally manufacture the presidents to do the bidding of the global pharmaceutical industry. It's wild. Philip K. Dick is not the only prophet dealing in such things, not by far. As usual, there are Simpsons episodes and various other media, including the oft-mentioned 1993 dystopian American novel by Octavia E. Butler, Parable of the Sower, which begins on July 20th, 2024. Astrology, long the business of royal courts around the world and throughout history, can also be a useful tool when dealing with the big events, the big changes. One of Twitter's favorite astrologers, Star Heel, Heel with an A, posted this on July 11th. Quote, "If Biden is made to step down, because he won't on his own, it will be at the Capricorn full moon at 29 degrees Capricorn. Capricorn rules the government in old age. 29 degrees is an ending." End quote. Posted 9:11 a.m. July 11th, 2024 from West Palm Beach, Florida. She is asked, "Any date?" And a few minutes later replies, "July 21st. But let's go back 4 years to when she posted this, quote, "Kamala Harris will be 60 years old in 4 years. I see her running for president in 2024, since this coincides with her Saturn return." 2:41 p.m., August 11th, 2020. Twitter user Arcana Prasanna replies on the same day, quote, "If Biden is elected in 2020, then he would be the nominee for the 2024 election. She can't run." End quote. Starheel answers at 5:43 p.m., again on August 11th of 2020, "He's too old." Saturn return, which I only learned about a month ago, as, like Kamala Harris, mighty Saturn is making its return in my life too, is a time of great personal and professional change if you're still alive and kicking. It's the time when, let me just read it off my astrology app, which feeds off my natal birth chart, something I finally had drawn up just a couple of years ago when it seemed both necessary and somewhat provable, because when you don't see such a thing until 5.5 decades of your life has already passed, you have a life to compare to the supposed ups and downs somewhat set in motion by all which has come before and of which nobody can be unburdened of. Because at any given moment, we are the living result of what was. We can use the present to steer our future, but without functional time travel, we cannot use the present to alter our past. Says the app, "It is not a time for play or escapism. It's a time to course correct if you're headed in the wrong direction. If you are off track, you'll really feel it. During this time, you'll be met with heavy limitations and boundaries. encouraging you to rethink your commitments. Don't be afraid to let go of any person, career, behavior, or environment that isn't serving you. Any barriers you feel are intended to teach. Pay close attention as you're being given clear and objective feedback. Even if it's not what you'd hope for, your challenge is to accept it. Take action to change what you know is holding you back. If you do, you'll be given clear signs of support, bringing new energy, excitement, and purpose to your life. Well, that sounds better than not being alive, I suppose. The app is called The Pattern, and I do not endorse any such astrological tools nor any particular soothsayers or divination methods. What is relevant for me, and Kamala Harris, my sister, in the second Saturn return, apparently, may be total nonsense for you. That's fine. As for the Twitter astrologer, a lot of Desert Oracle listeners would probably rather not hear her follow-up prediction. So I'll leave it to you to look up if you feel the need to do so. Interesting times we are living in, with many signs and portents. My only advice about such things is don't overdo it. Don't play with the Ouija board too much, you know? I like what Carl Jung has written about consulting astrology, tarot, etc. He considered it a good form of introspection, of looking at decisions that you might be making and looking at the progress of your life. As we talked about on last week's episode, on July 12th, there is a very powerful societal response to the death of a king. It's automatic, it's wired into our being, and every couple of generations we experience a whole lot of such stuff. It's exciting to be alive in such a time, when single days gain infamy, when the events of a year or three compress a half century of seemingly unrelated troubles into a chain reaction explosion. And it affects everything and everybody, one way or the other. From Amboy to Zizix, across the Great Mojave Wilderness, this is Desert Oracle Radio. Soundscapes, as always, are by Red, Blue, Black, Silver. Go visit him on Bandcamp. Thanks to our handful of supporters who keep this show going at patreon.com/Desert Oracle, barely going anyway. New times are ahead if we're lucky. No time at all is ahead if we're not. Thanks for your mail orders at DesertOracle.com. I've got another dozen left to get out. I'm having a hard time. This past week, the office is just not fit for human habitation in this weather, although the mini-split tries its best. I'll get them out in the next day or two. And yes, I am working on the next issue of the periodical, too. Sorry, it's a little bit too much for me in this time when the planet Saturn is reminding me pretty much every day of my progress and limitations. Let's keep it positive. Progress. The fool's progress. Hey, be especially kind to your dog friends, your domestic animal friends, in this time of crushing heat. The moon is up high, that dramatic Capricorn full moon that has also played the country like a fiddle today. July 21st, 2024. What a year it has been these past 6 months. Thank you for listening. And good night from the Voice of the Desert.
Well, we are at the bottom of the hour, and you are listening to Desert Oracle Radio Replay on KGBM 95.9 FM, Bozeman Community Radio. Much of our news coverage these days, locally, is about wildfires. And I understand that a lot of the smoke we're seeing is coming down to us from north, from Canada, and from fires up in northern Montana. And that got me finding a reading from Terry Tempest Williams. This is excerpted from Campfire Stories, Volume 2, Tales from America's National Parks and Trails, edited by Dave Q and Elissa Q, published by Mountaineers Books, all rights reserved, read with permission. So Terry Tempest Williams is included in this collection of stories about national parks. This is about Glacier National Park in Montana, and the excerpt is from The Hour of Land. And in this chapter in the book, she first is relating the story of her family meeting in Glacier National Park and getting caught in a fire there in 2003, and that's exciting all by itself. But I wanted to read to you another part of this chapter, and you'll probably understand as you listen. Terry writes, "Much of the enduring valor of the Blackfeet Nation is drawn from fire. Between the glaciers that continue to hang in the high peaks above their homes and the slow rivers of ice that have carved the landscape around them, it is fire that helps to maintain their traditions and strength. Whether it is smoking the sacred pipe in ceremony or participating in sweat lodges with steaming stones and smoldering sage to purify the body and spirit, fire is a truth teller among the Blackfeet people. Even the sun dance, once practiced secretly for fear of government reprisal, imprisonment, or death, is now practiced openly in the name of prayer, sacrifice, and renewal, honoring the sun that lights up the world, a force that both gives life and destroys it. It is said that the Blackfeet get their name from the characteristic moccasins darkened by the ashes of fire. Fire is akin to many tribes. There is a long history of Indians as fire preventers and firefighters within the United States. In 1933, with the creation of the Civilian Conservation Corps under President Franklin D. Roosevelt, more than 88,000 Native Americans were employed in the Indian CCC Division to build fire lookout towers, fire cabins, and hundreds of miles of trails within remote forested terrain that provided access to firefighters should the trees ignite. In 1948, the famed Mescalero Red Hats organized themselves to become the first Native American fire crew to fight fires in the Southwest. Most of them were World War II veterans. They were also the ones who rescued an orphaned bear cub after a large burn in New Mexico that later fostered the legend of Smokey the Bear, dressed in a ranger suit and advocating for fire safety in our national forests. During that same period, David H. DeJong of the Native American Research and Training Center writes, "The Hopi Indians organized a trained firefighting crew. 2 years later, the Zuni Indians did the same. In 1954, the Red Hats and the Zuni Thunderbirds received meritorious service citations for firefighting from the U.S. Department of Agriculture. During 1953-55, Native American crews were formed in Montana from the Crow, Northern Cheyenne, Blackfeet, Flathead, Rocky Boys, and Forts Belknap, Peck, and Hall reservations. In the mid-1950s, the Bureau of Land Management also organized crews from among Alaska Natives. According to the Bureau of Indian Affairs National Interagency Fire Center, close to 25% of all firefighters working today on wildfires on our public lands in the United States are Indians. In Montana, many are Blackfeet. The distinguished Chief Mountain Hotshots are comprised of highly skilled Blackfeet crews who are dropped into dangerous fire zones to tame the flames. They are known as the Fire Warriors. I can't help but wonder how many fire warriors were fighting the mountain man complex we witnessed in the summer of 2003. Fire has been a traditional tool of warfare among the Blackfeet Nation for centuries, creating firewalls against enemies as well as using fire as a tool of restoration to rejuvenate land through intentional burns and fire management essential to the regenerative health of the prairies. It makes sense that the work of the fire warriors would be heightened in the 21st century as global warming is causing bigger and hotter fires due to the ravages of the pine bark beetle in western forests. Freezing temperatures during long cold winters killed the beetles. Now, no longer. Now, due to higher temperatures in both summer and winter, pine bark beetles go through multiple breeding cycles that kill more trees. The same climate changes that are creating more wildfires in the American West are creating the retreat of glaciers. Fire and ice are harbingers of change, and both are found in the dynamic landscape of Glacier National Park. A political fire is also burning in Glacier National Park. After more than a century of promises made and treaties broken by the federal government, the Blackfeet are challenging the status quo. They are demanding reinstatement of their reserved treaty rights to hunt, fish, and gather medicinal plants inside the national park boundaries. They are also asking for the voluntary closure of cultural sites essential to their spiritual practices. And their final ask is for joint management of Glacier National Park itself. Here is one prediction that can be made. Soon the Blackfeet will stand shoulder to shoulder in shared governance of these parklands with the National Park Service. After more than a century of being forced to retreat, the Blackfeet Nation is advancing like fire. The Blackfeet identity is rising from the ashes of national park history. Two-thirds of the Blackfeet live in Canada. Like the ecosystem of Waterton Glacier, they have been divided by an international border. Today, their sky blue flag flies high at the Lake McDonald Visitor Center, flanked by the American flag on one side and the Canadian flag on the other, inside America's 10th National Park. Three sovereign nations merge in an international peace park where Glacier National Park and the Waterton Lakes National Park create a contiguous boundary of faith. It was at this intersection of nations that we celebrated John Tempest's birthday in Canada on July 26, 2003, across the border in Waterton Lakes National Park, a country away from the fires of northern Montana, but still within sight of melting glaciers. In 1990, the writers Bill Kitteridge and Annick Smith edited a 1,000-page anthology of Montana literature, including Native storytelling, the journals of trappers, poems, short stories, and essays from close to 150 writers, offering a mosaic of some of the finest writing, past and present, that have ever been written in the American West. The collection was called The Last Best Place, and it became a regional phenomenon that both jump-started a Western literary renaissance and captured a hard truth in one poignant phrase: the disappearing landscapes within the Rocky Mountains. Darnell Davis, a Blackfeet elder, said recently, "The last best place is our first place." In the coming weeks, I'm going to be reading a little more from Terry Tempest Williams' piece in this book. And by the way, this book is available at your favorite bookseller. And I'm also going to be talking about the indigenous people of the Yellowstone National Park region. So I hope you enjoy that. There are a couple events I wanted to tell you about coming up. First off, the Grow Wild Montana is hosting a rendezvous at the Beehive Basin Trailhead. This will be August 12th from 9 to 11 a.m. and it's a wildflower and weed hike. Hikes will last 2 hours and proceed at plant identification pace. It's free and open to everyone. And if you want more information, you can contact info@growwildmontana.org, and that is spelled growwildmt.org. I also want to tell you about an event from the National Park Service over in Yellowstone. The event is called Voices of Yellowstone, First Peoples Celebration. This sounds so cool, guys. It is from August 4th, 2024 to August 10th, 2024. So it's every day. And here is a little bit about that event. August 4th through 10th, 2024, Gardner, Montana. The Voices of Yellowstone First Peoples Celebration will take place August 4th through 10th, 2024, in Gardner, Montana. This event, hosted by Yellowstone Forever in partnership with Yellowstone National Park and in collaboration with the Pretty Shield Foundation, Rocky Mountain Tribal Leaders Council, and Gardner Chamber of Commerce and Visitor Center, aims to honor and celebrate the diverse cultures of the indigenous peoples of Yellowstone, past, present, and future. The public is invited to participate in this free week-long event. An opening ceremony on Sunday, August 4th, will feature a blessing, drumming, and opening remarks. Educational opportunities throughout the week will include illuminated teepees, cultural celebrations, an indigenous art market, a night of native games, cultural tours, and a community potluck. The celebration will be brought to a poignant and powerful close with a closing ceremony on Saturday, August 10th, which will feature guest speakers, a drum circle, and a final lighting of the illuminated teepees. For more information and a detailed schedule of events, visit Yellowstone Forever's website, and that's www.yellowstone.org/voices-of-yellowstone/. And just to give you a little preview, so you can make your plans before it's too late, Sunday, August 4th, 2024 at 7 p.m., there's an opening ceremony and lighting of the teepees at Arch Park. They'll have opening remarks from Yellowstone Forever, National Park Service, Gardner Chamber of Commerce and Visitor Center, and the Pretty Shield Foundation. There will be a blessing and honor song, and I think that's presented by Shane Doyle, and a native drum circle. At 9 p.m., there will be a lighting of the illuminated teepees. at the Yellowstone North Entrance. So that's in Gardner. And the Pretty Shield Foundation and Rocky Mountain Tribal Leaders Council presents Building Bridges of Peace, the first night lighting of the illuminated teepees. And the events go on every day of the week. And of course, you can get more information at Yellowstone Forever. And I will say, at 9 a.m. Monday, August 5th, they have a Native art market at the Yellowstone Forever headquarters. And then at 10 a.m., there's a cultural tour with Chris Latray at Yellowstone National Park. The tour will start at the Yellowstone Forever headquarters building at 10 a.m. and return by 4 p.m. The tour is limited to 12 people and is $50 per person. So you can register for that at the Yellowstone Forever webpage. And at noon on Monday, there is a collection of cultural ambassadors at Arch Park. And this says, until 6 p.m., you can visit with cultural demonstrators who will be sharing their personal cultural traditions and knowledge. There will also be teepees set up for folks to view and visit. And then at 9 p.m. is the lighting of the illuminated teepees at the Yellowstone North Entrance. Pretty Shield Foundation and Rocky Mountain Tribal Leaders Council presents Building Bridges of Peace, the nightly lighting of the illuminated teepees. And that's just one of the days of celebration through the week. So, yeah, enjoy it. Get out there if you can. It just sounds so wonderful. All right, you're probably tired of hearing about wildfires, but last week I mentioned about getting your go bag ready to go, and if you're wondering what that is or what you should be thinking about putting in there, most of the safety organizations recommend preparing for 3 days away from home. They list essential items as a portable all-purpose first aid kit, some canned goods, plus don't forget the can opener, if it's that kind of can. Cans of pet food and a portable pet food bowl if needed. A roll of toilet paper. Might want to bring several if it's going to be a few days. Feminine products, toothbrush and toothpaste, extra prescription meds, and 5 gallons of water. That should be 3 days worth. I'm not real clear if this is talking about enough water for 2 people for 3 days, because I'm thinking that might be a little more that you'd need for 2. Phone charger, cable and plug, portable radio and batteries, LED portable lanterns and flashlights, and a lighter, and comfort items, small bottles of shampoo and or conditioner, a bar of soap, deodorant, hairbrush, razor, hand sanitizer, hand wipes, rain poncho, blanket. And by the way, a lot of people recommend keeping a fire blanket, you know, as part of your go bag, because you may need it to run from the car to somewhere else or even to get to the car. An extra hoodie, extra shirt and leggings and pants. And don't forget to toss in these important documents, your passport, your birth certificates, social security card, credit cards and some cash, a contact list, a driver's license, medical card, insurance card. And having all those items in a bag will save a lot of time if an urgent evacuation is warranted. So hopefully that's going to give you a little bit of ideas, and you can see, listening to that list, you can see why it's a real good idea to have that packed and ready to go. Good luck. It has cooled down, and a little breeze is blowing, but hopefully you won't be hearing that right now. Well, we're coming to the end of the show, and I want to give my thanks to Ken Lane and Red, Blue, Black, Silver for their continuing work on Desert Oracle Radio and their willingness to share it with us. Our sounds today came from Birds in My Yard, and readings came from Campfire Stories Volume 2. You can find more information about Go Bags at readyforwildfire.org or at ready.gov. They have a lot of good ideas to prepare for any kind of emergencies. Thank you, Gallatin Valley, and everyone for listening today. You can leave me a message or text about anything on your mind. The number is 406-404-6246. You can hear this program on the air at 95.9 FM, Bozeman Community Radio, or you can stream it online at kgvm.org at 7 p.m. Sunday and 9 a.m. Monday. Our past Desert Oracle Radio replay episodes are also available on demand on the kgvm.org website. Well, I'm going to close the show today with this thought. You know, some people are comparing the political atmosphere in the U.S. right now to a storm, a coming war, or a firestorm. I'm even hearing people talking about fighting in what they call the coming revolutionary or civil war. And it alarms me that this seems to them to be an answer to discord. Let's remember we have made the mistake of literally battling each other before. And personally, I believe in nonviolent revolution. So today, I'm having a group called Watch House take us out with their perspective on brothers fighting brothers, a song called Wildfire. Thank you, Watch House, and we'll see you next week, everybody. Why?
Civil War came, Civil War went. Brother fought brother, South was spent, but it's true to my hatred passed down through the years. It should have been different, it could have been easy, but pride has a way of holding too firm to history, and it burns like fire. Southern town where the rebels run wild. They beat their chest and they swear we're gonna rise again. It should have been different, it could have been